Welcome to Wake Up. My name is Joel Alcaraz, and each week I will bring you new stories from the zeitgeist. What is the zeitgeist, you may ask? Some refer to it as the spirit world, the afterlife, or the in-between. Dreams often serve as a conduit between the material world and the spirit world. The two are very much intertwined. What occurs in the zeitgeist can shed light on the real lived experiences of human beings. Let's get started with episode 1 and wake up. The Pilot and the Sect, A Dream by Joel Alcaraz. In our zeitgeist, there was a pilot whose simple task was to carry families over the knotted forest to the slopes of the snow-capped mountains. As the pilot began to put the finishing touches on getting his tiny aircraft ready for the long journey, the pilot's little brother waved his hand, caught his attention, and briefly gave his big brother a hug. For the pilot's brother had a long journey back to university in a foreign city he now called home. The pilot wished his younger brother well, for he would not see him until his return. Then teased he would be transporting a lovely young maiden and her family to the slopes. The little brother grinned and fawned at the idea of abandoning his return to university for the mere pleasure of being within arm's reach of the very maiden he had his eyes on since he was a young boy. As quick as the spell had overtaken him, the little brother washed himself of such outlandish ideas, then made his way out of the hangar. The pilot stoically watched as the family began to march out of the mouth of the hangar, carrying their ornate belongings into the side of the aircraft. The youngest of them, a tiny scholar, eagerly went in first, followed by her oldest sister, the placid maiden. The anxious mother, the frazzled father, followed in pursuit. They flew off into the horizon, flying for many miles. Then, misfortune struck, as it often does for these types of situations. From the horizon, one could see the plane haphazardly descend into the eager claws of the hungry forest. The pilot, who had the instincts of a hawk, found a clearing to land on. The pilot, in his descent, spotted train tracks and made mention of it as he pulled the sobbing mother out of the craft. The scholar quickly spotted a trail that went south. The pilot pulled out his map and validated the young girl's solution. This trail would lead them back to civilization, but it would take many days to walk back, let alone find a way to contact the living. The family followed the trail to a dead end, a trail blocked by boulders. However, a small trail veered deeper into the valley of the forest. A small wooden sign pointed to a town called Amich, only 6.5 miles away. The pilot peered at his map, vexed by the revelation, for he had flown over these forests 1,000 times and never seen a town. He pulled out his map. To his dismay, there, on the faded paper, was a town called Amich. Unsure of the certainty of their doom, he ventured back to where he assumed the train tracks slept. The family, eager to escape the inhospitable forest, agreed to wait for him at Amich. They were greeted by the townsfolk as they made their way to the plaza. The town looked untouched from the ravages of time, as if built outside of it, but truly it was a testament to its fortitude. The decor of the building seemed foreign, yet familiar, as if they were created in the vestiges of dreams. The people were plainly dressed, laughing, and making their way through the simple town. No one seemed perturbed by the family's sudden appearance when they explained their pitiful circumstance to a gaggle of women in the market. A plainswoman took pity on them and invited them into her home. The plainswoman was a single mother to 3 triplets. They were a simple village bent on keeping the peace and achieving oneness with the world around them. They were a respite for weary travelers who longed to escape modernity, which explained why the plainswoman had extra rooms ready for unannounced visitors. The plain woman's triplets followed each other's shadows, moving in motion like a serene wave. The scholar followed the triplets outside, aching to explore the untouched town. The little girl played hide-and-seek around the small town. The townsfolk all smiled without ever breaking eye contact. The girl, too transfixed by the thought of getting caught, ran up to the steeple on the corner of the cobblestoned road. A wooden sign with foreign wording lazily hung from the iron gate. The scholar peered into the lot. Tombstones glittered the area. The voice of the plainswoman floated through the cemetery, carrying the scholar's curiosity. Her small fingers delicately opened the moaning gate wide open. She walked further into the lot as it became harder and harder to discern if she was in the town or in the forest. Small green lights bounced around her as the voice of the plainswoman became stronger, as the outline of a person became more and more real. A sweet fog enveloped the scholar. Grasping at her clothes, with every passing breath, she grew drowsier and drowsier. Until unable to breathe anything more than the smell of honey, the girl rested her eyes at the base of an old tree. Slowly, her skin began to dry as her veins expelled her very essence into the earth below. Her delicate skin became fine like paper, breaking into smaller and smaller pieces until something emerged from underneath the mask. Soulless, joyous eyes. The pilot trekked through the rusted tracks that slithered around the hills. It had been an arduous journey. The tracks randomly disappeared into the earth, as if the tracks themselves refused to aid the pilot. Occasionally, he would have to swallow his fear when he went long periods of time without seeing the tracks. As the black moon approached the apex of the sky, the pilot heard a soft whistle, growing louder and louder until it became a screech. A light blasted him from behind. A steam engine train groaned as it screeched into the night air. The pilot ran on the edge of the mountain and dove into the abyss. He rolled down the rugged hill, hoping for a quick end. The pilot landed on his back on a merciful crevice that saved him from his untimely death. The cargo was alive. The pilot could feel the litany of eyes staring at him. Bears with beaks clawed between the bars at the pilot. Frightened for his life, the pilot slowly climbed down the hill and made his way through the forest until he ran into the embrace of a sweet white fog. As he made his way out of the fog, the dim street lights of the untouched town of Amich eagerly awaited him. He could hear no music, but saw a group of plainsfolk dancing with each other in pairs. The quiet night raped by the sound of clacking feet and clasping hands. The pilot, frightened by the sight of the town, after a day's journey on foot, found reprieve at the sight of the little scholar. She smiled, beckoning him to the house on the corner street where the rest of the family was. The family, surprised by his appearance, beckoned him inside. The plainswoman smiled sweetly and offered him a place at the table. The father finished his bubbly golden beverage, then excused himself for the night, as he had a poor habit of eating first, then falling asleep. The dinner had turned into a banquet. Fresh oven-baked apple pies painted the air with their sweet aroma. Warm bread was piled on by the minute from the plainswoman. Fresh picked fruits yearning to be touched of all kinds hung from the centerpiece of the table. The mother, too anxious to eat, stared at her daughter, concerned for the youngest one, who sat there grinning from ear to ear, not once touching their plate of food. The pilot, unable to answer questions about his quick return, turned to the plainswoman to evade any questions. For fear he was losing his sanity, he asked the plainswoman, "How have I never seen the town before on my countless flights over this area?" The plainswoman smirked and said, "You cannot find what will not be found. It is the town that finds you." The pilot, afraid the firing squad of questions would return to him, asked a different question. "Everyone here seems untouched by illness or age. What secrets do you people have to remain untouched?" And with this, the plainswoman replied, without mincing her words, "We live simply, we worship the black moon, and we take care of for one another." The family and the pilot at the table tasted her words. "Here," said the plainswoman, "let me show you," as she pointed to the triplets. The boy's head began to sink to the neck of the chair, veins pumping out their essence as it dripped into the tiled floor. Their skin tore into confetti-like pieces. The plainswoman smiled without a single tremble of fear. Out of their skin cocoons emerged the triplets, now more stoic than before. Their beady eyes zeroed in on the family and the pilot. The pilot grabbed the petrified mother and the maiden, pulling them into the living room where the father rested in his own cocoon. The triplets charged at them. The family and the pilot ran out into the foggy night, racing down the cobblestones, staring into a milky abyss. However, they knew their assailants were behind them, their feet pounding on the earth. The mother screamed as she fell to the ground. The maiden, her face broken and pale as the mist around them hissed toward the mother. The maiden clawed at them. The pilot quickly grabbed a wooden stake and without hesitation smashed into the back of the creature's neck. The creature wailed, letting out its last breath as its head rolled off its body. The mother, unable to bear the pain of losing her entire family, pleaded with the pilot to let her die. The pilot watched as the mob quickly began to take shape. The gentle hiss of their dry breaths gave him the courage to flee the hopeless lady. The pilot ran into a construction site for the city of Amish. Skeletal outlines of the houses dotted the grim landscape. Only one building seemed to offer protection against the dead of night. It was this, or the damned forest full of creatures. He heard the mother wail, then silence. The pilot burst into the house, up into a staircase that swirled and swirled until he reached the attic. He held his breath, hoping he would not betray his location to the night air. A light slowly crawled out from under the attic door. His hand slowly reached for the copper knob as the footsteps grew louder and louder and louder outside his shelter. They would be here soon, ready to take him as their own. The pilot flung the door open and locked it behind him as the mob entered the house. The triplet smiled at him, and without warning, the house began to turn on its stomach. The triplet slid down to a small opening and crawled between the walls. The pilot's hand clung to dear life as the door began to pound with the demands of the plains people to let him in. Would he drop down and try his luck with the spaces in between spaces? Or would he pray that this was just a terrible dream that he would awake from? He felt himself falling and sliding down the attic towards the opening. A phone began to ring. A soft voice answered it. Pleasantries were exchanged before the call ended. The pilot's little brother asked his lover who it was. "Your pilot, the brother. He wants us to come visit him in the small getaway town. He's willing to fly us, and all our friends out there, all expenses paid." The pilot's little brother looked at his bunkmates, who seemed eager at the idea. "Then let's go," he said, to this town he had never heard of, a town named Amish. you for sticking around. My name is Joel Alcaraz, and what you just listened to was a recollection of a dream I had. I think dreams are a very important part of the human experience and condition. Dreams often can give us insight into our own minds and into our own internal turmoils and narratives that are clashing around in our heads. Most people just think that it's very much just a random set of images and it's all just stuff we're processing from the day. Well, that may be so, but more often than not, I think I have found dreams as a tool to help better my current situation. I've lucid dreamt before. I've had dreams within dreams. I've had what some people might consider out-of-body experiences, and it's all been an interesting part of my life, and I didn't realize I dreamt so intensely until my therapist brought it up. He said, you have very vivid, more so than anyone I know who is my client, dreams, and with such great recollection. I would encourage everyone to have a dream journal or at least ponder their dream or talk about their dream. It often leads to great conversations with friends. I have a friend who lives out in Los Angeles and I'm in Seattle, and all we do is, you know, talk about dreams whenever we have a crazy one, and we try to break down what the dreams mean. And it's great. It makes you feel heard, and it also colors your day-to-day experiences. This dream to me, I'll do some dream analysis right now so that listeners at home can sort of see what the process is like. I mulled over this dream a lot, and there was a lot of whiteness. What do I mean by that? Well, the town looked Scandinavian. The people were plain and white in my dream. There was a white mist, a white fog. Everything was very much centered around a Eurocentric culture. And I think in my dream, I related most to the pilot. I don't think the pilot was me, but as they say in dreams, every character you encounter is an aspect of yourself. The pilot to me, I think I most closely resonated with. He was trying to bring a family across and over a forest that was full of dangers, but something went awry and the plane had to make an emergency landing. And soon the family had found themselves in this town, and the more involved they became with the town, the more they lost their identities and they became a part of the town. The little scholar girl, she went into a cemetery and started to consume the white mist and breathing it in, and soon she became one of the plains people. The glasses are very important to me because to me they signify scholarly activity and what we see around us with this white consumption of knowledge has really led us to a point in society where we're things that were told are not the truth. If you think about history, the Tulsa Massacre has been omitted from our history books. The Philadelphia bombings have been omitted from our history books. The Operation Wetback has been hidden from our lore. Everything has been made to codify and endear a white audience and to minimize and to delegitimize minority voices. There, to me, that to me is like academia in this day and age, where when we talk about our history, our American history, it's always through our lens, and anything that doesn't fall in the image of us is not even considered. So how does this play into our current day? Well, minorities remember. People still remember. Institutions remember. Institutions are built out of past horrors. sit-ins and blocking highways and just disrupting the day-to-day of the capitalistic system, and which most people today would not think that he was for that. Everyone just pictures him marching peacefully to Washington, and then just all of a sudden, like overnight, race relations changed. That wasn't the case. Race relations just were tempered, and were molded into different things. I mean, now we have the prison industrial complex and all sorts of things, but you can get into a whole bunch of things when you look at what America has hidden. So that, I think, that is what the scholar girl represented. She was curious, but was poisoned by the town. The mist was interesting. The pilot tried to find an alternative way out of said society or said city, but ultimately was pushed back by a train. Usually in dreams, trains to me mean movement from one space to another, either in one's life or literal train stuff, which is movement. To me, that showcased that someone like a pilot, whose sole job is to help transport people, was pushed back by the very materialistic aspect of society. This train, it pushed him back into the fog, and he ended up having to go back to the town. It's like he had no choice. It's like the environment was specifically built to only serve that little town, that basically escape was futile. And I think I relate to this in my dream as feeling trapped by our current ways, our current race relations, our systematic racism, our economic system, our political system. It just feels like you're just beating a wall and nothing you do is making any impact. And in the end, it's going to be futile anyways, because in the end, you eventually just become a part of it. You become a part of the system. I mean, the pilot tried his best, but sooner or later, the town got him. And then because the town got him, he invited his brother over to the town, which to me, it's my fear. It's, if I fail, what does that mean for my family? What does that mean for my loved ones? They too will become a part of this. They too will suffer from the system. And it just seeps into my dreams. But I'm happy I got to analyze this dream, because it really showed how important it is to continue talking about these things, to understand how much it impacts you as a person in the day-to-day. You might not think that you're a part of this economic system or it's just there, but you're living in it, you're walking it, you walk through downtown, it's there. Fun fact, you can always tell what a society cherishes the most by looking at the tallest buildings in the city. Prior to the rise of capitalism, it was actually churches were the tallest objects in each city. So religion really played a role in the power structure. Now it's skyscrapers where banks and companies all roam around, which if you ever look at each city, you can see what people prioritize. But enough about that. I do thank you for joining me and for listening to me walk through my dream. Thank you for waking up with me. If you have a dream you'd like to share or you would like to analyze with me, I'm more than happy to have you on the show. Please email me at wakemeupjoel@gmail.com. That's all one word, wakemeupjoel@gmail.com. Thank you.